You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.
Well, it's 9 o'clock, so we'll get started. And I'd like to just open with a quick prayer. Dear Lord, we all here love your law, but help us as we study what's going on in our culture with the law of man and the many challenges that we have. And we pray that you would work through all of us as biblical counselors to be able to help people to navigate those challenges and to bring people into your kingdom. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, my name is Deborah, like in the book of Judges. So it's a good name for a Christian lawyer. Only I'm not a judge. I'm just an ordinary lawyer. And I'll tell you quickly my story, because I have been hanging out with this group for 30 years. I am not an ACBC certified counselor, unlike many of you here. I am from the other side of the counseling realm. I was a psychologized counselee for many years, like the first 40 years of my life. And the last person I ever saw, the last counselor I ever saw in that realm, left her profession of psychology and went into ministry. And then she died of cancer. Well, I knew I just could not go back into psychotherapy again. And I had heard this counselor after her changeover to ministries comment that the psychology that you have to learn in order to be licensed, a lot of it is diametrically opposed to the Bible. I had never even thought about the Bible and counseling in the same box. It was like those are two different worlds, and a lot of people do that, compartmentalize. So I began to search out the issue, and I stumbled eventually into Jay Adams' books. And I started reading those books, and light bulbs went on. And eventually, I ended up finding what is now IBCD in San Diego. I lived in Southern California at the time. And so I started taking those classes, ended up going to Westminster Seminary. And I knew George Scipione there and Jay Adams and started coming to these conferences, so here I am. After I finished seminary, I went to law school, and I've ended up speaking about legal issues in biblical counseling. And what I do as a lawyer, I'm admitted in California and North Carolina, but I mostly do federal work. I write friend of the court briefs on religious liberty and free speech and all of these issues that are so concerning right now. Anyway, I'm going to start at the end of your outline rather than the beginning. And then I'll go back to the beginning. The end of your outline, there are a couple of issues, cases actually, related to counseling. So I thought I would start with that since this is a counseling organization. One of the cases is one that Alliance Defending Freedom is still working on. It's about a counselor, Brian Tingley, in the state of Washington, who challenged a law that outlaws sexual orientation change efforts for minor counselees. And this Brian Tingley, he's a Christian. He wants to integrate his faith with his counseling practice, and he wants to be able to help just speak to his minor counselees about what the Bible teaches about homosexuality. But the way this law is written, it prohibits him from doing that. It would be wonderful if he joined ACBC. But meanwhile, this case went to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. You might have heard of the Ninth Circuit. They're kind of infamous. They get reversed by the Supreme Court a lot, and they're off the rails, liberal. And they ruled against this counselor just recently. And just yesterday, ADF filed a petition for rehearing. So we'll see where that goes. But there's some interesting things about this case that I want to note for biblical counselors, because the court mentioned that it's okay to talk about your personal views with your counselees, And it's okay to even refer a counselee to a religious counselor because the law has an exemption. I love this. It does not apply to religious practices or counseling under the auspices of a religious denomination, church, or organization. So, like a biblical counseling center, that's not hiring licensed counselors, but ACBC certified counselors who are not state licensed, this law doesn't apply. So there's a little bit of a silver lining there in this particular law. And there are other similar laws like that in other states that relate to sexual orientation change efforts. So it's important to know your own state law. But this one, at least it exempts religious counselors. But it's still, we want to preserve religious liberty. So it's good that that case is going forward or that ADF is going to try to get a rehearing. And if that doesn't fly, they could file a petition with the United States Supreme Court because there's another circuit, the 11th Circuit, that has ruled the opposite way. So there's a split. When there's a split among federal appeals courts, that's when the Supreme Court starts to get interested in the matter. So we'll see where that goes. And just for comparison purposes, the way this transgender ideology is being promoted, Alabama passed a law recently that prohibits sex change treatments like puberty-blocking medications and surgeries for minors. Well, that's a good kind of a law because a minor child shouldn't be able to consent to a sex change operation without parental notice or consent. But the government sued to try to overturn the law, our federal government. And the Department of Justice issued a very invasive subpoena against a public policy organization that might have had some role in drafting that legislation. So that's really a scary kind of development. That's a recent thing that I've read about and wanted to mention. And this Ninth Circuit decision, they collapsed two things that are not the same. Our ADF's client, Brian Tingley, he just wants to be able to speak, conversation. But they attached an article by a young man who claimed to have been harmed by sexual orientation change efforts or conversion therapy. And that young man was bound to a table with ice and heat and electricity and forced to watch clips of men having gay sex. Well, now that's conduct. That ought to be prohibited and should be illegal. And it's not the kind of thing that any of us at ACBC would ever want to do. So they equate that with pure speech. Totally wrong analogy. So there's that. There's another case that turns out a little bit better. Not a court case, fortunately. But many of you have heard Steve Byers speak at these conferences. I know last year when I heard him talk about all the wonderful things that his church and biblical counseling ministry is doing, made my head spin. And he's been part of this organization since, as long as I have, the early 90s. But in West Lafayette, the city council proposed an ordinance to ban sexual orientation change efforts or conversion therapy. And they defined conversion therapy as any practices or treatments that seek to change an individual's sexual orientation or gender identity. And they defined counseling in a very broad way, techniques used to help individuals make decisions relating to personal growth, vocational, family, and other interpersonal concerns. Well, biblical counselors help individuals make decisions about personal growth and all of those things I just listed. So it was very, very broad. It was intended to apply to both licensed and unlicensed counselors. It would have swept in pastors, biblical counselors. I mean, it was extremely broad. This is like a sexual orientation change effort ban on steroids. It was so very, very broad. But there was a wonderful grassroots effort that defeated it, never got passed. And Steve Vyers was part of that, but a group of people, concerned citizens, got together and they never passed that ordinance. If they had passed it, I'd be standing here talking about a court case, and I think that law would have been unconstitutional on its face because of it would have banned even clergy counseling. And ordinarily, with your state licensing schemes, they usually exempt ordained clergy. And there's a doctrine called church autonomy. The courts don't want to get involved in the internal governance of a church, who can be a member, who can preach. There's a ministerial employment exemption so that religious ministries can hire people to carry out their mission, people who agree with their mission. But these things are all being challenged, but we still have church autonomy. After I leave here, I'm going straight to the Christian Legal Society in Southern California, and every year there's a law professor that talks about church autonomy, and I see there's going to be a session on that, so I'll be tuning into that this weekend. Well, meanwhile, we have had some wonderful victories in the United States Supreme Court, so I want to turn to some good news. There's still challenges, but some good news there. I'm sure you've all heard about the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Yes, it's taken 50 years to get there. And Roe v. Wade didn't merely legalize abortion. I hear that terminology a lot. They constitutionalized abortion. There were states where it was already legalized. But what the Supreme Court did is they created a constitutional right out of whole cloth. There's no such right anywhere in the Constitution. It's not implied, it's not explicit, it's just not there. And it's taken 50 years to get that overturned. And there have been all kinds of cases in the Supreme Court and lower courts about abortion restrictions, even things to protect the health and safety of women. So that's a really monumental thing. As you know, there has been a lot of violent opposition to that decision. And there was a leak. The decision got leaked, and I still don't know that they found out who did that. But it was a very good decision. However, it merely sends the issue back to the states. I would love someday to see the Supreme Court recognize that there's a second independent life person who has a constitutional right to life and liberty, but that hasn't happened yet. I can only imagine the violence that would have occurred if that had happened. There's still a lot of work to do, and some of that involves some of you. There are going to be state-by-state legal battles to craft legislation. Some states, abortion is going to be banned, and some states like California would like to pay to bring people in who live in states where it's illegal. So there's a big battle there. And there are still going to be young women who get pregnant and need wise counsel. Even if it were banned in all 50 states, you'd still have that. So there's still work to do for biblical counselors. And the pregnancy centers, there are many wonderful pregnancy centers throughout the country, and they're being attacked. The abortion advocates would like to shut them down or force them to speak a government message. There was a case that went to the Supreme Court where California did just that. They wanted all the crisis pregnancy centers to be forced to tell women where they could call and get a state-funded abortion. Well, that got struck down, fortunately. But they're under attack right now. And we need those centers. And we need some good biblical counselors to work in those centers and to help the young women that are coming in who either are making decisions about the life of their child or who are post-abortive. That was a wonderful story that we heard yesterday. I love that. Love to hear stories like that. But it's also scary when you hear about what she went through. So that's one victory, but there are two more. There was a victory for religious education. That one came out of the state of Maine. There's an area in Maine where they don't have any secondary public schools, no public high schools. And so the state said, okay, we will pay for private education for those families that live in an area that doesn't have a public secondary school. And the parents get to choose the schools. But, there was a big but. It was okay if the school had a religious affiliation, but if they actually taught from a biblical worldview or some other religious worldview, then they didn't qualify. And the state would go in and examine the curriculum and decide, well, is this school too religious? You can't do that. The Supreme Court said if the state is going to fund private education at all, which they normally don't have to, but if they're going to, they cannot discriminate against a religious school. So that's a good victory for religious education, for school choice in general, that the state has to respect the decisions of the parents and not exclude, not discriminate against religion. And there are a lot of concerns in the public schools, as I'm sure you know, as to what's being taught and what's being done. The title of this talk today is The Rapidly Changing Landscape of Religious Liberty. And it's so rapidly changing that I'm going to read you something from my phone about a case. Let's see, I got to find it here. Here we go. Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm taking a minute here to find it. There it is. All right. Public school districts across the country are enacting policies that allow school administrators to affirm and facilitate the gender transitions of children while actively concealing these actions from parents. These parental exclusion policies often include a parallel attack on free speech rights, threatening students with suspension or even expulsion if they decline to use their peers' preferred pronouns. So a group called Parents Defending Education is committed to challenging these policies. So there's a case going to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals on that. So I get alerts like that. Sometimes they want people like me who write friend of the court briefs to weigh in, and they'll have these calls for people that write amicus briefs, friend of the court briefs. So, what are the implications here for biblical counseling? Well, some of your people you counsel may have children in public schools and they need wise counsel so that they can make decisions about how and where they're going to educate their children. A lot of families are homeschooling now. There are a lot of efforts to coordinate homeschooling. So it depends on what's available in your area and what your public schools are like where you live. There are actually Christians who dare to work in public schools, so you might be in an area like that. So they need help, and parents need help to understand what's being taught and how to respond and think biblically about it. And there also are a lot of efforts underway for parents and grandparents and others to serve on school boards. And there's like a mama bear, papa bear effort that's being made. I know where I live, there's a little group of people that they get together and they interview people for the school board and ask them questions, and then they support their election efforts. And we've got a pretty good school board in the county where I live. So that's important to know about. Another wonderful victory, which I call a gold mine for religious liberty, is the case about Coach Kennedy. Has anybody heard about Coach Kennedy? He said a private prayer at the 50-yard line after the football games. And sometimes students would come up and say, can we join you? And he would say, it's a free country, you can do what you want. So nobody was coerced to pray. The school district just went off the rails because somebody might see the coach praying. And so they were afraid they were going to violate the establishment clause if they allowed this coach to pray, say a private prayer. Even though the school district wasn't actively endorsing it, and it wasn't part of his job description. He was a coach. He wasn't a pastor where prayer might be part of his job duties. But they were worried about violating the establishment clause. Well, the Supreme Court overturned another case that's known as Lemon, because one of the parties was named Lemon. It was decided right about the same time as Roe v. Wade. One was in 73 and one in 74. And that Lemon case, it's been a real lemon. It has, you hear this separation of church and state all the time. That Lemon case really messed things up. It required for a law to pass the Establishment Clause under Lemon, it had to have a secular purpose. Well, the Free Exercise Clause wouldn't pass that test. Neither advances or inhibits religion, which, again, is crazy. The First Amendment wouldn't pass that test. It actually advances religion by protecting it. And there are a lot of accommodations of religion that are perfectly constitutional. So there's been a lot of case law on that. So it's just a bad law. And the third item was entanglement. Now, that one's not so bad because the government really should not become entangled in religious doctrine. There's your church autonomy again. But anyway, this test has been absolutely a mess. And I just chuckle when I see what Justice Scalia said about the Lemon test in a case a few decades ago. Justice Scalia compared the Lemon case to a ghoul in a late-night horror show that the court periodically kills and then resurrects. Here's what he said. This is just, he's a crack-up. Like some ghoul in a late-night horror movie that repeatedly sits up in its grave and shuffles about after being repeatedly killed and buried, Lemon stalks our Establishment Clause jurisprudence once again. Its most recent burial, just last term, was not fully 6 feet under, conspicuously avoiding the use of the supposed test, but also declining the invitation to repudiate it. Over the years, no fewer than 5 of the currently sitting justices have, in their own opinions, personally driven pencils through the creature's heart. I think they finally buried it. Justice Scalia would be so thrilled. He had his own way of, unique way of writing. And I know when I remember when I got the news that he had passed away, I felt like I'd lost one of my best friends. But I also remember a couple of months later, I was in D.C. to listen to oral argument on a case, and a young attorney who worked for Alliance Defending Freedom said something so profound. He said, sometimes God reduces the ranks of the righteous so that when victory comes, you'll know it's from the Lord. Yes. Amen, like in Gideon. So I've never forgotten that. And some good things have happened, like these cases. So, as I said, this case is a real gold mine for religious liberty. after these cases were decided, there were a lot of webinars online for attorneys to get up to speed on these cases. And there were so many of them, it was hard to keep up with them. And attorneys like me had to multitask. And I was listening to one of them, and the attorney from ADF who was giving the webinar, he said, "Now, I know you guys are all writing briefs, but put your pencils down." And he read to us this footnote from there that the Supreme Court reminded us that when a government policy demonstrates hostility to religion, the court has not hesitated to strike it down without further inquiry. That's a pretty amazing thing. So I've quoted that in a couple of briefs since then. The court also said the First Amendment protects the ability to live out your faith in daily life. So that's a wonderful thing to quote also. And they also mentioned that the Free Speech Clause, the Free Exercise of Religion Clause, and the Establishment Clause, they're not in tension with each other. They all work together to protect liberty. So there's at least a little bit of good news in high places, at least on some of these legal issues. So I like to emphasize some of the positive things. There's a few other victories that I will mention. Alliance Defended Freedom represented the New Hope Family Services. They placed children for adoptions and foster care. And a federal judge recently ruled that they cannot be required to violate their religious beliefs. This is a private religious agency. It doesn't accept any government funds, so there are no strings attached. And the government can't force the agency to place children with same-sex couples or unmarried boyfriend-girlfriend couples contrary to their religious faith. And that's consistent with a Supreme Court case a couple of years ago where that was at issue. Another thing that happened in Virginia, in Loudoun County, where there's been a lot of action in Loudoun County that I've heard about on the news, but there were some sexual assaults that occurred, including one committed by a boy wearing a skirt. And the Supreme Court of Virginia allowed a grand jury investigation to continue into these sexual assaults. The school board had tried to shut it down and cover it up. So a little bit of good news there, but this transgender ideology is probably the biggest challenge right now. Not the only one, but it's a big one. Federal District Court in California ruled that it is unconstitutional to require churches to pay for abortions in their health care plans. So that's good news. I can't imagine why a church would have ever been required to do that in the first place, but that's where we are. And the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, so a federal appeals court, ruled against a mandate from the Health and Human Services Department, a mandate to cover sex reassignment surgeries and abortions, contrary to a religious organization's beliefs. And that one, that's a case that the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty is doing. There are a lot of fine organizations that your notes include a list of organizations. And we have Alliance Defending Freedom here at our conference that I've been talking about them every year for a long time, and I'm happy to see them here. They have a wonderful church alliance program and a ministry alliance program, if you haven't already heard about it, so they can help ministries, churches and ministries across the nation to get their documents lined up, and they have kind of a religious liberty thing that they do. They evaluate where you are and what you might need to do to protect your religious liberty for your ministry. So anyway, the Beckett Fund is another good organization. And there's one right here. I don't know if any of you are from the Memphis area, but there's an organization right down the street called the Center for Religious Expression that litigates cases and protects people who want to spread the gospel in the public square. Okay. Center for Religious Expression. It's on the list. There's a long list of organizations and websites, and that's one of them. Okay, ongoing battles. Pronouns. Again, that's the transgender thing. And this is another one of ADF's cases. The Virginia Supreme Court is hearing a case about a high school teacher who lost his job, a French teacher, I think it was, because he declined to use male pronouns to refer to a biologically female student. So pronouns are getting to be a big issue. And you will probably run into that at some point. Transgender ideology and education, that's another area. The Department of Education has proposed changes to the regulations that implement Title IX that protects against discrimination on the basis of various things, including sex. Well, it's intended to provide equal opportunities for women. But our administration wants to expand that so that sex also includes sexual orientation and gender identity. Words are very important, and yeah, they want to redefine them. And those rules would apply to all public and private schools, colleges, and universities that receive federal funding. And there are serious concerns for free speech, academic freedom, women's sports. You may have heard about that issue. Privacy, due process, and religious liberty. There are some exemptions in place for religious schools. We'll see how long that lasts. So that's another big thing on the horizon. In New York, a Jewish university, Yeshiva University, is engaged in a legal battle as to whether they have to sponsor a student club that promotes LGBT issues. This is a private religious university, not a public. A public university, they really have to give equal treatment to student clubs, normally. Now, the Christian Legal Society had a battle that went all the way to the Supreme Court because a public university didn't want to sponsor a student club that required its leaders to actually agree with its mission. Yeah. And they lost. So here we've got a public university that is not forced to recognize a Christian club, and a private university that is forced, maybe, to recognize a homosexual club against their, contrary to their religious beliefs. That isn't over yet. They tried to get an injunction from the Supreme Court, and it was declined. So now they're not sponsoring any student clubs. So it's sometimes all or nothing. California, the left coast. I know there are Christians in California. I know of some of them.
There's two of us here.
Two of you. Oh, good.
There's four of us here.
Four of you. Yay.
There you go.
I moved away from the left coast. Now I'm on the right coast, the east coast.
That's Alabama, right?
Alabama is a good state, yes. I know a Christian lawyer who's from Alabama, so yeah, there's some good states. My North Carolina is, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff and bad stuff, so it's a mixture. It's a purple state. Normally I like purple, but in that case I don't. Anyway, in California there's a proposed bill. This is that would create a right to self-induced do-it-yourself abortion throughout pregnancy. And it gets worse because it subjects, actually, I'm just going to read what I've written here. This would prohibit a woman or her assistant, like an abortionist, from being subject to any civil or criminal liability for any pregnancy outcome, including abortion, miscarriage, stillbirth, or perinatal death, more on that in a minute, due to causes that occur in utero. This perinatal period is defined as up to 1 month after birth. This is infanticide. Just anything that results in a baby's death up to 1 month after the baby is born. Literally that can happen. I mean, that's really scary. And it gets even a little bit worse. It would impose draconian legal penalties on law enforcement officers or prosecutors who interfere with a woman's rights under this bill. I hope this doesn't pass. A prosecutor who chooses to file criminal charges against a woman or her assistant who kills a fully developed child born alive during a self-induced abortion will face a minimum of $25,000 in damages along with exorbitant punitive damages. This is just beyond belief, this stuff. So there's that challenge. So abortion, even though we've overturned Roe v. Wade, you can see there are still monumental, massive challenges. Creative professionals, that's another thing that's still going on. And if you have counselees, people in your church who are creative professionals, and if they offer services to the public, like a wedding cake designer, there's another petition going to the Supreme Court about another wedding cake designer. Even though we had Masterpiece Cake Shop turn out so well, Masterpiece Cake Shop was very narrow. It was a really good decision for religious liberty, but the Colorado Civil Rights Commission had showed such extreme hostility to his religious beliefs that the court found in Jack Phillips' favor on that basis, and they didn't need to get into the other issues. But there are other issues like what is protected under the First Amendment. Well, there's a good line of cases that this personal services required to create an expressive product, like a painting or a book or a website or a cake, those services are also protected. I mean, books don't just spring up out of thin air. Somebody's got to write them, and cakes don't just spring up out of thin air either. And it wasn't just a matter of baking a cake. He would have done it if it had just been bake any cake, or if it had been something that was on the shelf already. But Jack Phillips would have been required to custom design a cake, use his creative services. So there are still challenges in the courts. There's a website designer that is in the Supreme Court now. The court has accepted the case and briefs are being filed. I wrote one of them. And this website designer, she wants to design websites for weddings between a man and a woman. She doesn't want to be forced to custom design a website for two people of the same sex. That's not a marriage. That's a counterfeit. So that those issues are going on. Medical mandates. Health, that's another whole area that's developing as a result of the COVID-19 thing that we've been through the last couple of years. There are religious objections that have been raised to the vaccine mandates. The Navy SEALs have cases going in the 5th and 11th federal appeals courts because the Navy has just been denying them all across the board without any further thought, and that's illegal. So that's going on. In addition to that, in California, again, there are a couple of Calvary chapels represented by Advocates for Faith and Freedom, which is another great organization out there. But these Calvary chapels, they did not stay shut down during COVID. Their people were hurting, and they wanted to minister to their people, so they opened their doors. The Santa Clara County wants to fine one of these Calvary chapels almost $3 million. That is still in court. So hopefully there'll be a good decision. The Supreme Court eventually came to the right decision on that kind of thing, so stay tuned on that too. And there are also efforts to censor what the government considers misinformation about COVID. So that's a violation of the First Amendment free speech clause right there. So there are cases started on that, and they will be continuing. So you may have a counselee who is struggling with some kind of a mandate, maybe with their employer or a school or something like that. There are cases going on about that. And so there's a question, you know, where do you draw the line? At what point are you being forced to violate God's law? Important area for biblical counselors to help their counselees. Another big challenge at the federal level is a piece of proposed legislation. The House has passed it. The Senate hasn't voted yet. It's called the Respect for Marriage Act. I wish I could say that it was really respect for marriage, but sometimes laws are not titled. Honestly, this is not respect for marriage between a man and a woman. In fact, quite to the contrary. Back in 93, the Congress passed the Defense of Marriage Act, and that was rightly titled. It protected the definition of marriage as one man, one woman for purposes of federal law. This act repeals the Defense of Marriage Act. The Supreme Court already found it unconstitutional, but this one is a very deceptive title. It would require respect for any state definition of marriage. And the concern is things like polygamy. And after the decision when the Supreme Court purportedly redefined marriage as any two people, which we know that's not what it is, there's no limiting principle. Marry your dog. Or, you know, a man and five women, or a woman and, or any combination, any number, it could legalize pedophilia. Or, say, a marriage between an adult and a four-year-old child. I mean, there's just no limiting as to what might be defined as marriage under this law. And the IRS could use it to deny tax exemption to organizations that don't toe the line with the government's view. I hope that doesn't happen. Again, a church autonomy. I always recommend that if it's possible at all to do your biblical counseling under the legal umbrella of a church and the ordained leadership. And I know there are a lot of centers out there that are separately incorporated as religious organizations. And there's some protection still for those, but the greatest protection is under the church. It's like a legal sanctuary. So just a little aside there. This law would also possibly embolden lawsuits against organizations that define marriage as one man and one woman, adoption agencies, ministries that, say, help abused women, shelters, that kind of things. This is a very frightening thing. Well, we've covered a lot of stuff. We have 15 minutes left, and I would love to entertain any questions that anybody has.
Deborah, I have a question I was thinking about. You know, it seems to me that what we hear in the news all the time is that it's Christians that are being attacked. And, of course, the Constitution talks about religious freedom,
right,
which includes other religions.
Yes.
And so the frustration is that the Christians are the ones being attacked constantly. And it's like, why aren't we seeing, and I'm interested in what you see because you're engulfed in this area, mm-hmm, why aren't we seeing, you know, attacks or cases brought against Jews, Muslims, Hindus?
Yeah.
I kind of know the answer, but mm-hmm, I'd be curious to know what you're thinking.
Well, that's kind of a spiritual question, and this is a spiritual battle.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, Christianity... Jesus Christ is the one way, the way, the truth, and the life. Now, I did mention this Yeshiva University, so that's a Jewish university. So once in a while, you'll see something. And the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, they've taken on cases with people from other religions. But yeah, you're right. You don't see them as much. The marriage issue, that would sweep in Jews, the Jewish faith too, and even Muslims, so it sometimes does. But yeah, Christians are right in the eye of the storm there, I think. Yes?
What advice do you give to folks who have marriage ministries and have, you know, on their websites the definition of marriage and things like that? And you saying that, I don't know if it was the Special Marriage Act that may be coming after those kind of organizations. What advice do you give in terms of protection?
Well, I don't know what the ministry does exactly, but one thing is that... Okay. Is to have very good, well-written policies and definitions. And like with biblical counseling, it's important to have informed consent and to have a well-written form for that. And that's one of the things now that I would spell out on an informed consent form is not only is this based on the Bible, but we believe marriage is one man and one woman. That's something that needs to go in every ministry's governing documents.
What advice do you have on talking to Christian schools for adopting some of these philosophies, really dealing with COVID? I mean, with this, I know in one particular school a letter was sent saying, if you love God and it's for the greater good, we ask that all of you get vaccinated. And this was, so you're dealing with a Christian organization, but then you also have the biblical side. We did the Matthew whatever. That's not working. You went to an accountability of that school that they have put themselves under the umbrella of that school, and they had the same philosophy due to, you know, a different...
Yeah, and that's a private organization which... can adopt its own religious view, so there might be a case where you might need to move to another school, you know.
Right.
Yeah, which is sad. It is sad, but other than to go to them and discuss the matter, and yes.
So I'm in a really tricky situation because I probably in the next 2 or 3 years will be graduating from college in elementary education. And it's my dream to be in the public school and to evangelize faculty, to spread the gospel to students, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I say very tricky because I'm growing up in this kind of context. I'm learning a lot in this kind of new age.
Yes.
New laws and teachers losing jobs and things like that. And so when people ask me, you know, like what do you plan on doing with your education degree? I tell them I'm not sure, private or public. Although, you know, a couple years ago I was very focused on public school, but I wanted to hear your opinion on it. How close do you think we are to, like, before being a Christian educator in a public school is unsafe?
Oh, gosh. It probably depends on where you are.
Sure.
If you're in California, good luck. I would suggest, you know, that maybe you go to a state that's much more conservative. That would be one thing to think about, and watch the landscape, because it is changing. We've got a good U.S. Supreme Court right now, but sometimes you might have to be willing to be the subject of a lawsuit. So keep Alliance Defending Freedom's phone number handy. Or some other there are a lot of smaller organizations throughout the country. Every state has a family policy council, and so there's help available, legal help, but, you know.
Do you have any tips for keeping watch on those things, like any news sources or any kind of?
Well, that's what at the end of the notes, there's this list of resources. Yeah, take a look. There are all kinds of things. I get things every day on the phone. Yeah, so it's good to stay alert. Yes, yes. We need people that are willing to do that, to walk into the lion's den, so to speak. And that's what you're doing. You're walking into the lion's den, like Daniel did. Yes.
So with the Respect for Marriage Act, the Senate hasn't voted, you said.
It hasn't voted.
So what would you recommend would be the best way to approach your senator?
I would contact him and tell him that you're opposed to this. I know North Carolina values this. I know that you're in North Carolina, so North Carolina values has really encouraged people to do that very thing and contact their senators, and I've done that. Sometimes organizations like that will have a standard message, but it's good if you can write something personal. And, you know, and explain who you are and why you're opposed to it.
But they can give you suggestions on wording and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I heard about a proposed bill in California for minors who desire to have trans surgery, that they can come from a state that doesn't allow that. If they show up without a parent, state could actually take custody of them and allow that?
I hadn't heard that one, but I'm not surprised. Nothing really surprises me about California anymore, because that's what they're doing with the abortions. But I would think there would be a real problem with that, because, you know, minor child? Mm-hmm. That's just asking for a lawsuit, and we need some law. Okay, this one and then this. I didn't hear you.
The governor was ready to sign it 2 days ago.
Well, that one slipped past me. I try.
Have you heard of the ACLU taking on the National Association of Women and Boys Law and the women's organization?
I'm not surprised. Yeah.
Did any of y'all listen to John MacArthur on Governor Newsom putting out all the billboards?
Oh, I heard about that. Yeah, Governor Newsom, thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, the Governor Newsom has these billboards promoting abortion, and he uses scripture.
Yes.
Yeah, I did see that John MacArthur had. Yeah, good.
Love your neighbor.
Right. Yes. Not right. I'm not aware of any right now, but there's a homeschool legal defense fund, which is a wonderful thing. Homeschooling has increased so that and during COVID it increased even more when parents got a clue what their kids were being taught.
It's 20% of the school population now is homeschooled.
Oh, 20% of school population. Thank you. Yeah. I know a lot of Christians are doing that. It's just perilous to put kids in public schools these days. But I am glad that we have some young people that want to take it on and work in the public school, because we need Christians, too.
I have a question. This is when lawyers use the word civil rights,
Is that actually a technical term? I mean, we have all kinds of things that get attached, like this is a civil right, this is a civil right. But in the legal profession, what does that
mean? Well, there was a Civil Rights Act of 1964, so, you know, it is a term that's used with legislation. It's not in the Constitution. In the Constitution, there are basic things like speech and religion that are just laid out, and so those are constitutional rights. Civil rights, I would say, are come by statute, like the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Okay. Abortionists say that this is a civil rights issue. I mean, how do those? I mean, it's not true from the legal profession, but so how do those? Is that because that's a convenient way to attach some legal leverage?
Probably, yeah. I mean, to the abortion advocates, it's a women's rights thing, and so the Civil Rights Act says you don't. Outlaws some certain discrimination against women or against men, you know, against someone because of their sex. And so they view restrictions on abortion or even contraception as a violation of women's rights. One of their arguments is that women need this access to contraception and abortion in order to participate in the workplace on equal terms. And they don't. I mean, there was a brief that went in to the Supreme Court from a group of professional women saying, we don't need abortion to participate in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And then you have...
Do you have any resources that just a normal person could go to find definitions to certain legal terms to understand the Constitution? I know there's Wall Builders, which is...
Yeah, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's right. Great. That's a good point. We all need to understand the Constitution. And the separation of powers, that was something that I went to a seminar that Justice Scalia did on that. That is so important. And like with this COVID stuff, I was talking to Tricia about that this morning, that we've got government by executive order. Well, the executive branch of government is not responsible for legislation. Sometimes legislation will give an executive agency the authority to make regulations, but the authority is limited, and they're not limiting it. The transportation mask mandate was struck down by a federal judge in Florida because the CDC, Center for Disease Control, CDC, does not have the authority to issue a mandate like that. They were out of line doing that. That happens a lot. Yes.
How close do you think you are in the country for the trans community to have protections under Title VII? I mean, they use the language all the time.
Actually, there was a case in the Supreme Court. It was in 2020, so I didn't talk about it this year, as I talked about it before, where they actually did find that you can't fire somebody simply for being homosexual or being transgender. So it's already there. I don't think that's correct, but that's the Supreme Court did that. Even our conservative Justice Gorsuch, who normally is good, but he left room for religious liberty exemptions. But we'll see. We'll see. All right. Well, it's 10 o'clock, so I'll close, but feel free to. I'm going to sit down here and...
You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.